Welcome to another episode of I Pledge Allegiance. This time around, Larry and Miles will be chatting with Jacob, head of strategy at Celestia, and Andrew, founder of Conduit. They'll be having a discussion that covers a wide range of topics, including DA, Celestia, and Conduit's work. These are topics that I'm sure most listeners have heard about and probably discussed at length, but this week's episode really gets into the nitty-gritty in ways that I don't think have been discussed as much before. Without further ado, Larry and Miles, please take it away.
I'd like to welcome Andrew from Conduit and Jacob from Celestia on I Pledge Allegiance this morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Thanks for having me on the pod again. Excited to be here.
For new listeners, Andrew's the founder of Conduit. And what Conduit does is they make it super easy to deploy a real op or a chain. And then we have Jacob. What's your title? Chief Strategy Officer at Celestia?
Yeah, Head of Strategy at Celestia.
How do I get that title? It's a cool title. And of course, everyone knows Celestia. They're a DA solution in the market. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Excited to be here.
Awesome. Thanks, Larry. This is Miles from Reverie. And we're going to touch on a few topics today, but maybe to start off, we can kind of rewind the clock about 6 months to before Celestia had even launched. And Andrew, from your perspective, I'm curious if you agree, it did seem like there was a lot of latent demand in the market where devs wanted to launch rollups, but the market was constrained a lot by the cost of running these ETH settlement rollups. And the vast majority of that cost was attributed to DA. And so I guess from your perspective back then, did you feel like you were struggling to maybe acquire new customers because they didn't think they could be profitable, or even have current customers that were thinking about churning because they basically were running at extremely unprofitable margins?
I would definitely say that DA was a big issue. I'd say it was good to separate DA from what was actually happening there, and you know, free to talk about it now because it's been solved. But essentially, for the OP stack, you know, it produces a block every 2 seconds, even if there are no transactions, and no matter what, that data needs to get sent to layer one as part of just the consensus of the chain. And that kind of meant, particularly with Ethereum-based DA, that you could be paying anywhere from 50 to 200K a month just in settling this chain with empty blocks to Ethereum. Obviously, that is a very high bar to clear. We've had some customers that had challenges with that. And I think that's really where Celestia was kind of a release valve, where suddenly, instead of paying 200K a month, you're paying maybe like a couple thousand a month. And that compression of costs was, for operating expenses for business model, was just insane. I think secondarily, obviously, there are per transaction costs that go down. I think for some of the chains that we run, it's the customer paying gas for users and internalizing the fee revenue. So the per transaction cost didn't matter quite as much. But ultimately, bringing that fixed cost down to something manageable was the release valve that, if you saw earlier this year, our migration of a bunch of chains to Celestia, enabling them to continue to run their business at a profitable kind of margin.
I do remember a good portion of your customers did migrate when Celestia became available. And I remember chuckling to see just the insane magnitude of cost savings that blew my expectations away. I'm curious, over time, has your views on these alt DA solutions like Celestia evolved? Were you ever maybe a little bit wary of the security trade-offs that they might represent? Or did you really always see these as a key unlock in Conduit's growth and really the broader scaling story of Ethereum?
I think it was always in the cards. I think the question was, maybe RAS gets this a lot, but optically it looks like there's a lot of competitors, and the question is who's going to emerge. I think similarly for Conduit, there's a lot of DA solutions that were getting pitched to us, and we just didn't have the time to investigate each one deeply, and we just kind of wanted to see the market leader emerging and rallying behind that. And I think Celestia being first to market there really cemented our initial relationship there. Zooming out, if you look at Ethereum-based DA, if you're looking at just call data, there's a fundamental limit to how many transactions rollups can kind of produce, something in the range of 400 TPS or so if it's just transfers, which if you look at what Visa is processing today, it pales in comparison. And I think blobs maybe increase that a bit. We're starting with some pretty conservative targets. And then even at full crypto dank sharding, you're probably limited to 1,000 or maybe even 2,000 TPS, something in that range. And so I think if you can run all of crypto forever on that kind of TPS, then maybe crypto itself isn't a particularly interesting industry to be a part of. And so I think ultimately for crypto to really thrive, I think you are going to need forms of multi, and whether that's Celestia, whether that's EigenDA, whether that's OP Plasma kind of on the horizon with basically storing data in a very centralized manner, allowing users to opt into the level of security that they want is just a very clear product form factor for us. Users drive a lot of value from that.
I think you have to look at the solutions and think about them from a perspective of, okay, what is my use case? How much security should this use case have? Obviously, gaming would be very different than something like payments, but both gaming and payments need extremely high TPS to work at scale. As you're thinking about what is unlocked by the 100x cost savings, are there any use cases in particular that you are now really excited about that weren't possible in a pre-AltDA world?
One, I think a lot of apps before AltDA are kind of designing around the constraint of very high fees on even layer twos. And that ultimately leads to just a worse UX because you have to do all this work to try to hide this insane fee. Somebody has to kind of pay that. And I think what cheap fees are really bringing is instead of hiding the blockchain, I think you can actually expose that kind of more directly to users or even other models where you completely subsidize fees and abstract that away a little bit. Similar to, it's maybe not the greatest example, but I think in the early days of Ethereum, there was like CryptoKitties. It was all over the blockchain, one of the major apps. And I think with the rise of DeFi, it kind of got priced out. And I'm not saying that CryptoKitties is the application, but applications like CryptoKitties, maybe longer tail, or just enabling more use cases around verifiable on-chain compute that's open, that's composable, that anybody can kind of interact with, is the white space that we're kind of seeing now. And I think we saw it in the early days of Ethereum, and I think rollups, L2s, L3s, maybe even L4s and L5s one day, seem to be the form factor that's bringing back that kind of experimentation.
I think the CryptoKitties example is great because typically one of the ways that NFTs sort of took off in 2020, 2021, there was sort of like this big wave of generative PFP collections. Some of one from previous eras, obviously CryptoKitties, but also stuff like CryptoPunks, et cetera. And I think that there's going to be a transition to heavily on-chain verifiable generative stuff. We talked to generative artists who are exploring entire fully on-chain generative purpose-built like on-chain VMs. There's folks who are basically putting AI agents on-chain or like different AI models, this sort of stuff. I think what's funny is that the coolest use cases of this next couple of years in the modular era are actually a lot of the things that people considered scams in like 2016, 2017. So like social networks, on-chain AI, decentralized compute, weird custom virtual machines and execution environments, DPINs, like all of these things. And I think some of them certainly still are underdeveloped. They're very expressive, interesting, exciting ideas, but the execution isn't quite there yet, or the implementation isn't quite there yet, or they have to bootstrap an early network effect. But what is cool is that there is this sense in which every idea that people over the years have suggested should be on chain eventually does make sense on chain. And it's sort of just limited by the credible scaling that's available. And so a lot of stuff was unlocked, for example, when Solana and a bunch of the alt L1s took off in reaction to Ethereum's congestion in like 2020, 2021. In this era, there's, I think, a bigger focus on enabling dedicated block space and custom compute for a lot of these crazy long tail experiments and segments. We're basically going to get a huge number of shots on goal for a bunch of these out there ideas, as well as like things that people have talked about for a while, but we can never really bootstrap a network effect around. So things like social, and there's a lot of really cool experiments on the social side, I think, right now as well.
I totally agree with that, Jacob. It's like that old aphorism. There are no bad ideas, just ideas that are too early. And it's fun you bring that up. Something we've been doing at Reverie for the last few months is just going through Google archives from 2015, 16, 17, and seeing some of the funky but cool blockchain apps that people had in mind. Like, I remember one that I think it launched, you guys may remember, in 2016. It was called Arcade City. And it was like this decentralized Uber situation. I don't know if you guys remember that one.
With a K, right? Arcade with a K or no?
I don't remember now, but I think it was based in Austin or somewhere around there. But totally agree with your point. And it's awesome to see some applications that people previously tried and failed because the infra was not scalable. Maybe we'll succeed this time. Taking a step back, guys, Celestia launched, and it's no secret, right after Celestia launched, all of these other DA providers launched. There's like Avail, or at least teased the launch. There's EigenDA, and there's probably a bunch of others I'm missing now. In conversations we have with some developers who are considering using DA solutions, they're all confused. They don't know the difference in the product offerings and the trade-off space between all of the DA solutions in the market. And I guess at a really high level, how do you guys think about this stuff? Like, how do you navigate the DA landscape at a very high level?
Let's think about what DA is for a second. So DA is like ultimately where the security of your chain is primarily derived from. If you take a blockchain apart, turn it into modular components, DA is kind of like the part that's basically that base fundamental process or function that's needed for this whole array of different types of computer chains that you'd want to build on top. The notion that anyone can be a DA layer is actually quite literally true in the sense that in response to like Celestia's success, there's sort of been this trend of all these different L1s. A lot of people know Near for doing it, but I think Avalanche has said stuff about this. Polkadot, a huge number of different chains have been like, we're going to probably just get into DA as well, because look at how much unused block space we have. We might as well. At the end of the day, what it really comes down to is which one of these DA layers or approaches is actually credible enough to have long-lasting relationships with developers and users. And the reason why we actually want to encourage every chain to just all of a sudden launch DA is because the more chains that launch DA undifferentiated, or we have some extra block space, put some rollups transactions in there, the more that happens, the more it draws attention to the one that's different from the rest, which is Celestia. And Celestia, the thing about it is it's got very, very, very concentrated bet on this being ultimately what is the deep underlying function that basically the whole industry will move to rollups on some timeline, or at least in the near term, will heavily move to rollups. And that it's going to unlock a need for high throughput DA. But then the question is, which DA layers do you trust to deploy that on? And so Celestia sits in this differentiated brand and like position within the stack in the sense that it's this other component that you ultimately might want to mention to somebody. When you say this application I built, it's built on the OP stack and Celestia, you wouldn't want to be like, yeah, it's built on the OP stack and insert like a L1 from 5 years ago. People, when they're thinking about where to build one of these, they want to build it on something that's like purpose built and directly focused on them as a user and them as like a developer. I think that that's why it's evolving the way it is. At Celestia, we basically feel almost zero insecurity or risk or fear around all these new entrants and all these other folks doing DA. And one thing I also would like to clear up is one of the things that's often said is, well, our alt DA solution on this sort of older L1, it's like way cheaper than Celestia. Anything is way cheaper than Celestia. Like if you want to use AWS, if you want to use some kind of IPFS thing, whatever you want to do, it's probably going to be cheaper than the decentralized credible option. And it's very easy to price block space. If block space isn't full, you can kind of always find a way to like underprice it. For us, it's just not really something that we worry about because ultimately what we're selling is credible block space. The difference in cost is just so low between Celestia and when you actually step back and you look at the difference between an older Alt L1 that basically offers DA and Celestia compared to the previous status quo or even eventually 444, Celestia will still just always be way, way cheaper for the same amount of throughput. And so it basically doesn't really matter at the end of the day. If you're reducing the cost like 1,000x and then someone's like, well, I reduced it 10,000x, what are those use cases where someone's actually sensitive enough to that degree and to the point where they start sacrificing on credibility of their security in their block space? And so in many ways, all these new entrants kind of only serve to advertise even more the category. And by being the category leader, we actually end up benefiting from that.
We've definitely noticed the pivots of a lot of these older chains to do something like DA. We'll also see pivots to restaking and lots of different things like that, but totally see how it builds more awareness of DA as a solution broadly. And when people think of DA, they think of Celestia, the pioneer. And we can touch on, I think, a little bit more on purchasing decision drivers a little bit later in the pod. But I think that's a really good summary of, I guess, how we got here. The beautiful thing is, for a lot of those crazy use cases that we were talking about, you no longer actually have to raise VC money in order to launch on mainnet. I think that in itself is just a huge barrier that's been broken down that should expand the market a lot. But Jacob, I want to ask you another question on, I think you touched on it here. There's so many ways to use Celestia. You can be posting data as an ETH settlement rollup. That's really where the majority of the market was in the early days of after launch. And then you also have more native rollups on the Celestia and Cosmos side, even have Cosmos chains that post data to Celestia, as we saw with the Stride announcement. But on the ETH settlement rollup side, do you see them as continuing to be a huge part of the usage of Celestia? And I'm curious, what are you guys building specifically for these ETH settlement rollups that might further break down any sort of potential security trade-off that teams might be looking at when thinking about, okay, post 4844, I can use, it's a bit cheaper, right? Or I can use Celestia, which is even more cheap. But maybe if you could speak a little bit to Blobstream in particular, that'd be great.
I think that the Blobstream conversation is a good one to look at. So a lot of times people will talk about some rollup framework that doesn't have proofs yet in production, and they'll say, oh, like posting to Celestia versus posting to Ethereum may introduce certain security trade-offs or whatever. The reality is that the main challenge with these systems is their lack of proofs. That's coming. That's basically on the way. And then the question is like, well, once you have proofs, you have fault proofs, you have a fully permissionless, like sort of ZK proving architecture or something. If it's a settled rollup, how does that basically use a DA layer that's not secured by Ethereum or directly, or like is basically somewhere else, and, you know, still operate the bridge, basically ensure that people can withdraw, funds don't get stuck, et cetera, that sort of thing. And to operate the rollup fully with proofs, you need to do sort of like an integration with the bridge contract and the proving system that proves, attests to Celestia's data route on chain on Ethereum. And so that's what our Blobstream product does. The original version of it was relaying signatures from Celestia to a contract on Ethereum, and then bridge contracts, you'd integrate with that in the proving system. The new version of it that we use is a reworking of it that's basically entering production now. It's getting deployed basically imminently. That is built by Succinct, and it uses a ZK-like client. So it's basically like a proof of consensus over Celestia's data route, and then they put the ability to verify that proof on Ethereum or any other chain initially, you know, using the EVM, but we could obviously prove it in, if we wanted to, you could have it on Solana or in Starknet or on Cosmosm or whatever. Then you basically just integrate with that into your rollup bridge. That gives you the ability to submit fraud proofs and have like a working fault proof system. And in fact, that is actually what our Arbitrum integration already is. We actually have fully working Nitro fault proofs in the Arbitrum Orbit stack. Obviously, there are some trade-offs versus native Ethereum DA, but for the amount of throughput that we offer and the fact that no other modular DA or Alt DA even offers this or has this integration built out yet, it's probably the least bad option when you're considering where to build. And if you're trying to build something that you straight up cannot build on existing ETH DA, your alternative historically was to do things like StarkX or AnyTrust or whatever. And those systems, not only are they way more trusted than the industry expects from its baseline core infrastructure, but the other problem is that you shouldn't have to call the BD team of a rollup framework to deploy a chain. A really big part of our vision is that you should just be able to go on the UI of something like Conduit or another RAS provider, and you should just be able to go deploy a high throughput chain, and you don't have to worry about whether someone shuts off the masternode. That's basically the problem that we solve. And I don't see an alternative on Ethereum that scales Ethereum or Ethereum L2 ecosystems that's basically as fully fleshed out and fully baked with slashing for data withholding, like all this kind of stuff that Celestia has. We are actually going to go all the way and integrate with every proving system, every rollup framework on Ethereum, et cetera, and ensure that folks can still withdraw a deposit on Ethereum or L2s or whatever. That's what we're focused on. And we think that the need for this in Ethereum is only going to grow because 4844 is really, really good for, I think, the general purpose ETH L2s. There's three blobs per block, I believe. And basically, ETH L2s have enough usage to post there and consume that, but there's not that much total throughput. And to the Ethereum role developer, Ethereum application developer, we're offering this out-of-the-box high throughput option that doesn't really trade off much from a security perspective. And we're going to build all the supporting integrations, infrastructure, et cetera, for every leading rollup framework stack, or ensure that they get built and that they're audited and secure and stuff like that.
And Andrew, I'd love to pose a question to you. And I'm not sure if you'd agree with this characterization, but I almost think of you guys as almost like a DA reseller of sorts. So you see all sorts of DA solutions. You have the end customer ask you for advice on how to evaluate the different options. How do you think about the DA landscape and reacting to what Jacob just said?
If you look at the market today, Celestia is kind of the market leader. Obviously, we migrated a bunch of rollups to Celestia. All DA powers unique experiences like L3s on top of Base, for example. And so it's really emerged as this Swiss Army knife. Today, Celestia being the only option for that, in the next couple of months, I think we're perhaps going to see more competition. I think EigenDA is slated to launch in April. Avail, obviously coming to market in the next couple of months, I think will enable our customers to have more options. Maybe a good question to ask is like, if the fees are cheap enough, then what's the differentiator between various DA providers here? And is it a branding thing? Is it a marketing thing? Is it maybe a grant thing? And I think ultimately, time will tell. I think we have customers that come in with certain preferences. Maybe that's because they have shared investors. Maybe they're just more familiar with that ecosystem or closer to that team. And so we see a variety of asks. I think a major factor in favor of Celestia today is it's the only one that's on mainnet. I think it got there first and is doing, from our perspective, a really great job on executing against integration into the role framework. So obviously, that's an area we work pretty closely with Jacob and team on. We obviously run these stacks. We want to make sure that that integration is really secure, audited, and not going to introduce vulnerabilities. Ultimately, what we'd like to see is other teams doing a similar style of work. I do think that looking at OP Plasma on the OP stack side is maybe a good, in some ways, example of things to come, where I think Nitro or the Arbitrum Orbit side of things has fault proofs built out. I think the integration into the fault proof, therefore, is a bit more complex. And I think Jacob and team have done a great job of doing that with Blobstream. On the OP Plasma side of things, so this is the Alt-DA interface for the OP stack. In some ways, the way it works is that you post a hash to layer one or settlement layer of your choice that references the data. If you get challenged on that input, you're forced to post the data. Otherwise, the chain reorgs. And in some way, that is a very singular interface for DA providers, where then it becomes, you know, relatively easy for anybody to integrate into this and then have the same guarantees around the security of the chain. Seeing that on the OP stack side, I think in some ways is a commoditizing pressure on the DA landscape. And so we'll ultimately see. I think for us on the conduit side, we want to make all the options available. I think allow the customers to opt into the one they want, and ultimately make it easy to kind of switch between these if the need arises. And maybe there's even a world where it's not zero sum and you're posting to multiple DA layers, right? Like you're posting to Celestia and EigenDA and S3 somewhere just to have the maximum amount of reliability and security there. I think there are variants on this that might be less zero sum than we kind of believe.
Really interesting to hear you guys talk about this sort of high level stuff as how DA providers compete. And Reverie, we all consider ourselves analysts. We look at the different providers and try to form an opinion. Okay, like how will these guys compete? And one thing, Jacob, we've been really impressed about Celestia with is, and you kind of alluded to this, if DA providers are a commodity solution, then how do commodity providers compete? Well, it's on distribution and brand. And Celestia did both of those things really well. I mean, the brand part is phenomenal, and so is the distribution part, both from the RAS providers, but also from the general branding, where if you're an app and you associate your brand with Celestia, people perceive you as legitimate. And stuff like that is so damn important. And you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how the other DA providers counterposition if they sort of understand that brand and distribution is important and they know that Celestia is doing that as well. What are they going to do next? Just an open question that we have often at Reverie.
Another benefit of going first there's a lot of leverage and you get opportunities that you just don't get by being second, et cetera. You kind of have to prove yourself, you know, you kind of have to explain why someone has to support another framework or do, you know, or support another DA layer, all the additional infrastructure, all that stuff. But the other big thing about going first is that if you press that advantage, if your ecosystem starts surfacing new use cases or new capabilities, and you're kind of like the first one there, you basically get to tag along to all these new novel first time fully on chain use cases or whatever. And so what we focus on a lot in general in our ecosystem is we're very, very, very focused on trying to surface novel uses of blockchains and like how we can like redefine what a blockchain even is, because then you're not even worrying about the DA category anymore. You're basically just worrying about this relationship with developers who are building novel things that weren't possible before Celestia. And so that's a really big part of what we focus on, is we focus a lot on trying to find these things that are really unlocked by Celestia. In fact, like one really funny thing that's worth mentioning is when I first joined Celestia, one of the use cases or like categories that we had in like a table, I said like, well, this is the type of thing in DeFi that would be the most suited to being on a Celestia chain, whatever. And the names that we had were basically like Aave, Lyra, et cetera. And like, of course, those were some of the first things that migrated in the first months on Conduit specifically, those types of DeFi applications. Things that are have, you know, require a lot of on-chain scale and don't need necessarily a huge amount of composability or require spot liquidity or whatever. The modular architecture and high throughput DA and stuff, a lot of the opportunity for it will come from accelerating and identifying a lot of these like early applications and things that were not really that viable or possible before. And that's where we put like a huge amount of our time and focus, is like trying to surface as many of those weird things as possible, because even just a small number of good ones, more interesting ones, engaging ones, because the friction now is so low, it's stuff like RAS and Celestia that you basically can convert people to just go deploy their own. They see one of these chains out there in the market, they see somebody deploy one of these, and then they're like, oh, like I'm going to go to one of these self-serve RAS platforms. Of course, Conduit is kind of like the first one there, and they'll basically just go, can just instantly convert their idea to a chain and a reality and have zero fee onboarding. And it's a really, really expressive block space. And so that's kind of like a big part of it as well, as we've really, really leaned into how to take full advantage of being a first mover to actually influence behavior that basically accelerates the discovery of these interesting applications.
Appreciate the color there. I've a question that might be a bit unfair, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Pose it to both of you. If you were to look ahead, say 2 years from now, if you had to pick what you think is going to be like the top three decision drivers or purchasing decisions across DA solutions, what would they be?
I think I'd be really interested to hear Andrew first on this.
Happy to dive in on that one. Cost is definitely the number one thing, because ultimately this drives kind of the operating model for any business that's built on top of blockchain. We're already seeing it today. I think that continues to be true and is maybe then kind of a constraint on how big the DA market gets. I think ultimately it's not about attracting max fees. It's about providing the service as cheaply as possible to as many people as possible. And I think there are great businesses there today in the traditional world, and it'll be exciting to see if that continues to play out. I think beyond cost, it then comes down to narrative. I would kind of loop in decentralization and security into that. As Jacob was kind of mentioning, there are frameworks out there that don't have fault proofs live today, yet still have a lot of adoption. We're probably a big driver for that. But ultimately, when it comes down to security and decentralization and narrative, cost wins out. And then secondarily, if you're able to then build a business on this, then it's like, okay, what narrative advantages can we get for opting into a particular thing? The last one I would say comes down to, you might trade places two or three here, is really just the quality of service of the underlying DA. I do think that there is an execution advantage here, or just like tech advantage, where Jacob has talked a lot about this. But for example, alt DAs or alt L1s kind of pivoting to become DA solutions is probably not the right form factor, because Celestia is optimized specifically for DA. And I think that allows you and enables you to do better things. And ultimately, things like uptime, things like how well built out the ecosystem is, terms of RPC providers, other infrastructure, has a bearing on the reliability of the service, how easy it is to integrate into it. And so those are real things where if the DA service is down, that actually might bring a roll-up down. So it does become a dependency in terms of the uptime. So that is a very real factor. Sasha is the only one with a track record out there today, kind of being the only one on mainnet. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, as these other services come online, can they prove out that level of reliability and kind of service?
Yeah, I think another thing we're saying is with Celestia in particular, like, where does the leadership position come from? Actually, it comes from the fact that the founders of Celestia had these ideas 5 years ago. They basically were like Lazy Ledger white paper, I think it's like 2018, 2019. Originally, like all these discussions on like ETH research, Ethereum research community, basically around DAS, et cetera. A lot of the core ideas behind Celestia and obviously like the whole modular category, et cetera, how do you effectively, safely break down blockchains into the components and optimize those components? A lot of that thinking comes directly from this community and this project. DA is a commodity. It's like, well, yeah, but credibility is not a commodity. A big part of it is if you're going to talk up what DA solution you're using in your rollup, you're not going to go to your users and say, yeah, we're picking the one that paid us the biggest grant. You could say that, like people will do that, but where the ingredient marketing is actually an ingredient is when the ingredient is good, the ingredient is credible. And that's actually one of the big things about Celestia that people miss or like don't understand when they're saying stuff like DA is a commodity, because it's going to be either, oh, we don't even talk about the DA part, or we talk about it because there's some additional reason and additional credibility that our product or application gets from using it. That's the same reason why things like Intel Inside or whatever are relevant.
I think that's such a great point. I think it's lost on a lot of founders. What you often see, founders who, they can't hide it. It's like this authentic, I'm excited about this technology and I'm going to go build it. To Celestia's customers, it's like, you guys have been working on this forever, authentically. It wasn't like a quick money grab. It's not like, oh, hey, like we're going to be mercenary and just capitalize on a trend. It's like, no, we're excited about this and we're going to dedicate our life to it. Versus like some of the other, and I'm not going to name any names, but some projects are like a little bit more mercenary about it. Sometimes that does work in the market, but usually not as well as the true authentic, we're doing this for the tech, to use the commonly used meme. And I think that sort of stuff really matters in terms of differentiating your product to the marketplace.
Well, it's also because of the essence of what DA is. So DA is ultimately the security of your rollup is only as secure as your DA system. And it's like going to someone saying like, yeah, we're using the less secure option because they paid us a big grant. It's like, okay, sounds good. But why would you want to tell your users that? Who would be proud of that? Celestia will have its ups and downs, will have its various bumps and bruises and stuff. Like as an ecosystem, it's like a decentralized ecosystem. It's not controlled by one person. So like you can't ensure perfection, but there's definitely just like a credibility that I think has been earned over like a number of years. And especially that Moose and the others who founded the project, they believed in this vision years before anyone else really saw it. A lot of people often ask us, how did this pop out of nowhere? It just feel like it just popped out of nowhere. It's like, no, it was actually bubbling up and building up for like many, many years. And you can't really fully solve a lot of these scaling problems that we've had as an industry without a solution that's just much deeper and gets much more at the root of what was wrong with the fundamental, the original architectural decisions. And that's actually like a big part of where all this comes from. One last thing I'll say too is one of the big things was about how to think about things like ingredient marketing and what's the right phrasing. One phrasing you could always use would be like powered by Celestia or secured by Celestia or whatever. And what you realize with an ingredient brand, for example, like with stuff like Intel Inside or whatnot, is it's like, no, it's just the existence of this thing. Just this thing being there basically provides all that value. And that sort of goes to show the level of credibility that I think Celestia brings to projects when this is their selection, because its existence or just its incorporation means that like it just instantly confers some amount of credibility in terms of if you're going to build something that requires this much scale, like that's the approach that you took. You chose the market leader. So I think that that's like a really big element as well.
It's become super clear that security is part of your brand. We see this with DA and we also see it with restaking and projects wanting to get closer to Ethereum by being secured by Ethereum. And then I think the other big piece that both of you hit on maybe you could sum it up saying like reliability or peace of mind, just knowing that Celestia is not going to be pivoting out of DA anytime soon. And Andrew, when we were talking about similar questions for RaaS providers, I think that was a big driver as well. And loved those answers and wanted to get your thoughts on kind of how this market structure might look in a couple of years. And we touched on it a little bit here, but with general purpose chains using kind of, we'll call it, I think Zaki coined this Wagyu DA, they're kind of using Ethereum for settlement and DA. And then you might have a longer tail of a lot of projects using Celestia and other solutions. But I'm curious if that's also kind of how you see this playing out, or if some of these larger roll-up hubs are also going to point to Celestia. I mean, I think Eclipse is one potential example of that. It wants to be a very large activity hub, general purpose, and is using Celestia specifically so it can scale the execution layer with use of the SVM. But is that maybe unfair to say that you'd see like maybe the biggest five activity hubs using the Wagyu DA and then projects that are a bit smaller but still very large using Celestia, which the market maybe views as like grade A, like grass-fed organic beef, and then you kind of have even longer tail using some of these less secure solutions. But yeah, curious if that resonates with you at all, for both of you guys, honestly.
There's going to be plenty of use cases. The whole point of the whole modular thing is by breaking it all into components, there should be multiple options in each of these categories, whether it's settlement, whether it's execution, whether it's DA, et cetera. One of the cool things about the project is that it was always with the idea that if it's modular, things are pluggable, then like, yeah, there will be other approaches. The other thing though is when you think about what types of chains benefit the most from different levels of security guarantees. So for example, ETH L2, general purpose L2s, before Celestia, before the modular era, if you look at what the L2s all were before Celestia showed up, there was some long tail of application specific things like StarkX chains. There was chains that launched, but then were immediately hit by a lot of like really high call data costs, et cetera. But for the most part, almost everything was basically just a copy of Ethereum mainnet. And you can see this in pretty much every major L2. So Arbitrum 1, OP mainnet, even Base, Scroll, et cetera. Every single L2 was basically just, you're doing the same things that you do on Ethereum mainnet, but it's 10 times cheaper. To me, those things are very close to Ethereum. It makes sense for those things in large part to use 444. If they're not targeting transaction costs below a cent over the long term, if they're not targeting lots of throughput, and they're just trying to be a somewhat cheaper version of Ethereum mainnet, then like those L2s, especially with 444 now, it makes sense for them to use native DA, in my opinion. We don't really see those as things that are like uniquely unlocked by Celestia. Like if you're still going to have like 5, 10, 20 cent fees, like you're going to have like 100, 500, whatever TPS, like instead of thousands, like eventually, then that makes more sense. When you get into the world of people wanting to build their own chain, like deploy their own chain in a few minutes and take some Solidity code or eventually, hopefully, pretty much any type of VM and deploy it as its own blockchain with lots of throughput, that's when Celestia is, we think, the best option. And whether you do that settling on Ethereum, whether you do that as a sovereign chain, whether you do that in some other ecosystem, we kind of don't care. As Celestia, we just want to bring that credibility, that credible, abundant block space and scale to any developer who wants to do this. And so this is what sort of when people have asked us, for example, like, well, what do you think about 444 or this or that? Like, well, how is the space going to evolve? And our answer is we just want to be known as the one that's basically enabling all this abundant high throughput block space that unlocks all these new types of VMs, experimentation, new applications, et cetera. We're not wedded to some notion of necessarily like every chain will hypothetically use Celestia. And we also think, last thing I'll say is we also think there's going to be eventually like a pretty big ecosystem of sovereign rollups, whether that's on Celestia or other DAs. So there's going to be eventually quite a bit of demand for that architecture as well. And so that's basically how I'd segment it. And it sort of like will break down based on how do like different data layer options suit that kind of market structure.
It's so interesting talking about this. Everyone in the market is thinking about it and discussing it. And if we take a step back and look at what may be happening here, we have this new technology, the DA layer, and we're trying to figure out how the end state market structure would segment. What would even segment? One, if we kind of just extrapolate the current maybe 3 months to the future, one way of looking at it, or certainly smart analysts do look at it this way, not sure if it's right or wrong, is the generalized L2s. You can almost think of them as like the enterprise customers. They're going with Ethereum DA, as Miles calls it, the Wagyu DA. And then maybe some of the smaller applications or like SMBs and startups, they're maybe going with the alt DA providers and Celestia. And maybe this is how the market will segment over time, and maybe not. Also, what is the profitability of each customer base? Do you want the enterprise customers, the optimisms of the world, or would you rather have a bunch of startups? I don't think anyone has the answer, but really interesting to see it unfold.
Maybe just one last thing on DA before we hop back to RAS. It is interesting where you're unlocking all of this new use cases because it's so cheap to use. But at the same time, people are kind of looking at DA solution tokens and thinking, okay, how are these guys actually going to make enough revenue that justifies, I guess, the market caps that we see right now? I am curious, just in general, a question for both of you, how you think DA value capture is going to play out, and what are some maybe non-obvious value capture sinks that you're thinking about in absence of just looking at revenue projections for DA fees?
The best DAs are going to be like Costco, where you just have massive amounts of volume, you have economies of scale somehow, and you're able to charge the cheapest fees while offering the best service. Costco's a pretty awesome market cap company. Those are probably my best thoughts there.
Is Celestia going to offer the $1 hot dogs then?
Yeah, next quarter.
We need that.
So I totally agree, actually, with what Andrew said. So a lot of times people point to revenue or this sort of thing, and first of all, Celestia is like a few months old. Second of all, the unit economics of DA, the more adoption that it has, the more they expect there to be pressure to keep the unit economics really, really cheap. The most important thing is actually just the ecosystem finding demand or use for like all this abundant block space. The ability to extract on DA, it's why or where can you do that? So I think Ethereum historically has done that because it was the only way to do it credibly. The only way to offer DA in a credible and security in like a credible way to other blockchains at like really, really big scale was on Ethereum. In the modular architecture, even after 444, that's now repriced. People are not trying to buy it in the same market as they're buying ARBs and sandwiches on Uniswap transactions. There's basically a desire to have it priced separately. And I actually think the unit economics will never really go up per byte. Only at like very, very large scale, maybe be due to like chains composing with each other on the same DA layer or something like of this sort. But in, for example, the values of the Celestia post that I think Moose did just before we went live, one of the points in there is basically about sustainability through abundance or sustainability through like economies of scale rather than be extractive. And I think that's basically where it gets really interesting. And if you start sort of extrapolating to all the way up to 1 gigabyte block size, there's a lot of interesting properties that you start to get for a DA layer when you get really, really massive. One of the big ones is that to get that big, you end up needing to probably have something like a DAS architecture to make sure that it's verifiable by everyone in the world, or else you're basically just trusting data that's being put in some data center or something. And when you end up needing something like DAS, well, then you end up needing this build out of all these light nodes everywhere. Once that happens, it's sort of a question of, well, how does anyone else really ever get the ability to do the same thing and build out such a large, like sort of light node network across all their users and whatnot? And that's one of the things that we've been working on and we'll have more on in the coming months, is basically the ability to scale up our block size and also scale up the number of people who can verify the correctness of Celestia really, really massively. And I think at those very, very large scales, one thing that people like to say, for example, about 444 is like, oh, people are going to put all these blob descriptions and inscribe the 444 blob space. And that's actually possible because Ethereum is really valuable block space and is the most censorship resistant general purpose block space in crypto. And so it's possible people are going to want those blob inscriptions and those will be valuable and they'll have a moment, whatever, and it'll end up driving up the price of blob space for Ethereum. But if your blocks are 1 gigabyte, it gets really, really expensive to do that kind of thing. And so basically you end up with a market for blobs that would be like absolutely impossible to spam and impossible to inscribe to death, hopefully. There's a limited form in which we've already seen that. There were a lot of inscriptions late last year on Celestia when Manta was sort of the only chain deployed. I think the team running the infrastructure for Manta just basically Caldera, they just like increased the fee. It had no like issues or anything. The block space wasn't persistently full because it actually is expensive. When you have higher throughput, it's actually just more expensive to spam at scale. And so that's one thing that I think people are underestimating is when you get to really, really big blocks, you have this question of how do you make sure it's verifiable at like really, really big scale? And then the other is if the unit economics are the same, the cost per byte is the same, only at really, really large blocks do you avoid spamming risk at like really large blocks. At least that's one theory. And then another thing is just that separate of any value capture topic, one of the things that we see already in the community and ecosystem is uptake of TIA for utility in rollups. And that's likely going to be the main way that Ethereum is used too. You can already see this whole thing with all these bridges from ETH to obviously like it's the way people price gas. It's the unit of account for gas. It's people are building all these LRTs and LSTs and whatever that people use inside of rollups and then DeFi inside of those rollups, et cetera, whatever. That will probably be a very common pattern is finding other utility inside of rollups that either make the experience easier for deploying a rollup. So like if you don't have to worry about, well, what's my gas token going to be or whatever, that's like a nice additional utility. I think the unit account for modular block space is an interesting utility for developers.
I couldn't agree more. I think the pricing dynamics are going to be really interesting to watch to see how they evolve. And I know Celestia's biggest focus on the R&D side is continuing to increase the size of the blocks as you guys scale. So it makes a lot of sense. And I think we've done a good job kind of exploring the DA market landscape and want to shift gears back a little bit more to the RAS side. And I think an interesting question that I always ask folks in this area is, who is the main distribution channel here? Larry mentioned that Andrew's kind of a reseller for Celestia at the moment, but from Jacob or Andrew's perspective, do you view yourselves as the main distro channels, or do you view whether it's a DA solution or a rollup framework as the, I guess, distro channel that's pointing projects to these RAS providers?
Jacob mentioned we want to see everything powered by Celestia. And I think in a world of infra providers, everybody wants to say powered by us. That's Spider-Man meme, everybody kind of pointing at each other. I think we definitely see ourselves as distributors of Celestia. I think Jacob can probably speak to the numbers here or what he's seen, but we have over 20 chains deployed on mainnet and like hundreds in testnet. And I just don't know that anybody else is close to that in terms of the scoreboard. And again, with our ability to do self-serve, I think market leading position, Celestia being at the forefront of enabling cheap fees and all this stuff, it's a great distribution channel for them. That is certainly compelling. Just being top of funnel in terms of customer relationships, I think is definitely somewhere that we can drive that point home. In terms of like marketing and deal inbound, you know, we work closely with obviously the role of frameworks. We work closely with things that we resell in. I think Celestia obviously done a great job at the marketing with ingredient marketing and kind of being at the forefront of that. And I think it's been a very creative kind of relationship being able to work together to close those deals. I'm sure Jake kind of has his perspective on that as well.
When people talk about distribution, I think one of the things that they're missing about how the market for deploying blockchains is shaping up is that this isn't just Conduit, but Conduit, I think, has probably been at the forefront of like actual one-click deploy a blockchain, like a smart contract vision that, for example, Celestia has sort of had from day one. The way that I think it's going to go in the future is like everyone will basically start treating blockchains as they're going to be very, very large. Maybe they run their infrastructure themselves, or they need more of a managed service. And folks like Conduit also, I think, offer these sorts of things. That whole universe of developers who before, maybe they're deploying websites, web apps with things like Vercel or Next.js or these kind of like different platforms. This is this coming to blockchains. A lot of what will happen is like people will get an idea and they're just going to go deploy it on whatever is like the most convenient, but also reliable, trusted platform for that. I think we're leaving the era of like everything is seen as like some BD or pure relationship driven adoption curve. As I said before, like we're trying to surface these like really interesting, exciting, novel uses of blockchains or ways of redefining blockchains in the hope of inspiring developers to go basically just go to something like Conduit or other RAS providers and go just like deploy a chain. We're not thinking of it in the sense of we go to a conference, we meet someone, we get them to deploy. It's just like we think of it more as like a bottom up. Developers will choose to do this. This is the paradigm in which they're going to deploy chains and deploy applications in the future. It's already here. Like, it's already happening today.
I couldn't agree more. That's why it's great to have you both on, because when you combine the cost savings of Celestio with, I guess, the ease of use and self-service of Conduit, you need both to kind of unlock this future that we're talking about. Jacob, you mentioned that you want to integrate Celestio with every rollup framework across Ethereum, as well as more native Cosmos-based rollup frameworks. But Andrew, from your side, it's a little bit more difficult because you're the ones actually running all of this infrastructure, and it's a lot more complicated, I guess, to support new frameworks. And so how do you think about the RAS landscape evolving broadly? Do you think you are going to specialize and really lean into a couple different frameworks and DA solutions? Or are you also just kind of looking at the landscape and, okay, if there's demand, we'll go set up some infrastructure to support that. And if Conduit ends up being the market leader in 5 to 10 years, then maybe you're supporting 10 to 20, even more roll-up frameworks and DA solutions or something like that. And so I guess, how do you think about whether we'll have these specialized providers? And then I guess, how do you prioritize your own roadmap around that?
Today, we support the OP stack and Arbitrum Nitro. I think what's really underrated is how hard it is to make something that anybody can spin up our network. They have like tutorials on that. I think that the challenging part is doing this in a reliable, secure, performant, scalable way. Frankly, we're the only ones with sophisticated builders on mainnet, whether that's Zora, Avo, which is kind of the market leading perp decks, among, you know, proof of play, mode network. These networks have real usage and volume, and building the infrastructure to support that is non-trivial, and we're the only ones that have that. And so I think in terms of folks that not only want to launch a mainnet chain, but are planning for success, I think there's really only one option today. Our customer list backs that up. Moving beyond those two frameworks, I think tying into that previous point around infrastructure, I think any new rollup framework, particularly if it's even if it's EVM, I think Arbitrum Nitro is a good example of EVM, and you can repurpose a lot of the same infrastructure. As soon as you go non-EVM, it becomes really challenging because not only do you have to learn a new rollup framework, all of the ways that it can fail, all of the security touch points, how to make it AJ, how to make it auto-scaling, et cetera, et cetera. You also have to learn an entirely new VM or like ecosystem. Does the tooling exist for that? And so like, I think a good example, maybe this is unfair to Celestia or whatever, or just Cosmos in general, but like integrating with Celestia, each one of these is a new thing. And so like, yes, they share the same SDK, but each blockchain is its own thing. It's hard to reuse a lot of the same work. Whereas like with the EVM, you just have this massive network effect around developers, around tooling, and that just makes it incredibly easier for new developers to get on board. And that only serves to kind of improve the ecosystem. Today, we're very focused on the EVM because of that. And anytime that we've ventured into supporting something else, the questions around tooling always come up. And it's like, oh, if we're going to support this quality level that we're happy with and we're proud of, basically we'd be investing in this ecosystem. We probably want like a huge grant from whoever's owning that. So the work is underrated. The magic of Conduit is that it just works. You don't have to worry about these problems as you scale and as your app succeeds. It's an infrastructure problem. It's really challenging. It's underrated. I don't think anybody but Conduit has really solved it today. And I think we're excited for the expansion of our business, both from the self-serve side, I think showing the infrastructure and automation, bringing that to anyone. And then two, on the back end, the more enterprise clients that we have today that benefit from that kind of scalability. So knowing that barbell approach where you can both capture what I'd call like longer tail apps at the beginning and then being able to capitalize on the growth of these over time is, I think, where we see ourselves really playing today.
Makes sense. I mean, it's hard enough to kind of do what you guys have done in terms of auto scaling and just general reliability with the shared property of, say, like the EVM. When you start to add in different VMs, it's just a huge investment. And maybe just to touch on one framework and ecosystem that's been pretty interesting to see develop with the base L3s. It seems like a very polarizing topic because I think we've been in this modular versus monolithic debate for a while now. I think when the monolithic side hears about L3s, they basically throw up and they're like, you guys haven't even figured out L2s yet. But there's a lot of adoption going to base L3s. And curious to kind of unpack maybe what that says about the market and like developer preferences. In general, you know, I pose this to both of you. How do you guys think about L3s and base L3s in particular? And do you think that this ecosystem is going to be a big part of Celestia and Conduit's growth story?
100%. I think it's incredibly bullish what Conduit is doing here with the EVM. And I think it's just further proof that the technology can scale. I think obviously work closely with Celestia on this because you kind of need all the data to power this on the OP stack side. And then on the Orbit side, we're primarily using AnyTrust today, but with some of the things they have slated around Blobstream support for Nitro, you know, that will be an attractive option as well. But the L3 stuff is fascinating. 4844 has really brought down prices, and so that's great on base. But I think there's still, with execution fees rising and that becoming the bottleneck, it's pretty clear that if you want to build an app-specific experience, but tap into the distribution and kind of user base and everything that's going on with base, you'll need your own dedicated environment. That's where L3s and app chains come into play is, again, it's the same kind of EVM you know well. It's the same form factor that you're familiar with. But instead of selling to layer one, where narratively you might feel you're competing with other layer twos, whether it is base, whether it is, you know, Arbitrum One, whether it's, you know, OP mainnet, you get to have cheaper onboarding from an existing ecosystem. You might, for example, one day get direct centralized exchange onboarding onto your L3. On the Coinbase side, obviously Jesse being at the forefront of base and on-chain summer and everything that he's doing over there is a great proponent for anybody building on top of base. And so there are marketing distribution advantages there. I think it's just a very compelling form factor for devs that want to tap into that energy to get a blockchain just for themselves, to be able to build the application that they want and to insulate themselves from fees and structure of the layer two that I'm generally bearish on the one-size-fits-all kind of narrative. And I think everything settling to one layer two is kind of a microcosm of that. The sovereignty benefits, the cost structure benefits, the form factor benefits are an incredible boon to what we're seeing today, which is this massive wave of new chains and folks building great best-in-class apps on top of that. So I think that's what I'm most excited about is the demand as well as these folks actually building new product experiences that weren't possible before.
Yeah, I think one other thing that's like really insightful from the base experience with L3s is right now we think of all these new chains. We call them new chains. We're like, okay, there's a new L3 here or new blockchain. You know, someone's deploying a new rollup or whatever. One thing that's really interesting about the base ecosystem is that if you look at the language that's used around the chains deployed there, it's emphasizing the dedicated block space on base. It's sort of this idea of scaling base. It's almost like using L3s as additional lanes within the same ecosystem. And so it sort of points to this thing I was saying before, which is basically around the redefinition of like what a blockchain is. And then basically people sort of associating that with the app that's deployed there or the unique use of that space. It's like the developers own dedicated block space, but they get to be part of the base community, base ecosystem. They can tap into Coinbase wallets, Coinbase's distribution. But the interesting part is, it's not like those things are not supported on Arbitrum. It's not like those things aren't supported on OP mainnet. It's more just that there's like a concerted effort to build this community and foster these use cases there. There's just sort of like this community emerging around building heavily on-chain applications, whether on base itself or on these L3s, and then basically ensuring that they have this like really incredible onboarding and user experience. I think Friendtech was sort of the canary in the coal mine there. It was very much this really powerful demonstration of that whole end-to-end experience where you kind of tap into this existing social graph, you use Privy cheaper than if you did it on mainnet. That's like the teaser of this. We're going to a world where like a lot of these experiences are very complex. And actually, one of the things I've said a while ago is that I actually think the two biggest trends in the industry at the infra layer are actually not what people think. Of course, I think one of them is Celestia and one-click deployment of rollups, but the other one I think is really around this trend towards eventual chain abstraction, and that's driven through the uptake of embedded wallets, account abstraction, things like turnkey, and signing as an API experience. And so those two things together allow you to create really, really powerful user experiences and really, really powerful applications. It's sort of like it solves the onboarding side and it solves the scale side. And between those two things, you basically have what you need. And Base speed runs that vision. They built all this additional account abstraction stuff, the smart wallet stuff that they're doing. Privy feels like it really took off there. The whole Farcaster thing, like there's this whole full stack approach to building applications. And in our view at Celestia, that's a type of environment where what we bring to the table, which is really, really high throughput, credible, high throughput block space, really, really, really shines. We're removing the scaling bottleneck. And then this other stuff, what Base and the broader ecosystem offers there is removing the distribution bottleneck and the onboarding bottlenecks. And so it's like together, it sort of comes together into something that looks more and more like normal tech, but it's still hopefully decentralized, credible. It's just kind of like ushering in a different era of crypto infrastructure and crypto. It's an interesting contrast, I think, to what we're seeing in Solana, where it's one big environment. In some ways, it has some similarity to Solana. And like when you think about Solana as having local fee markets and dedicated lanes for blockchain's perspective, I think Base with the L3s and all its distribution advantages, in my view right now, is one of Ethereum's best contenders to sort of compete with that vision and really push back on that vision. I'd say a lot of other L2 ecosystems are sort of looking for similar, but this in particular, I think, is a very, very tight feedback looped environment where we see a lot of interesting attraction by consumer crypto builders who want that kind of like one-click high throughput block space experience.
Look at the reasons why a team would deploy on Base, just the general purpose chain, versus like a dedicated L2 is really around distribution and interop and all of the tooling that comes with it. And I think now we're seeing some of the first examples of how you can break the trade-off of getting all of those things, but also getting the dedicated block space. And it's not the only sort of hub and spoke architecture that we're seeing across the space. In the Celestia ecosystem, we see this trend where RAS providers are themselves also a chain. So this is examples like Dimension and Anisha, where the chain offers kind of like a settlement and interop hub. They pair that with a RAS solution out of the box, one-click deploy frameworks. The signal there is that the way that I guess a RAS provider could become even stickier is through providing also first-class interop and shared settlement features between the rollups that are using the RAS and the framework. I'm curious, Andrew, you are kind of on the other end of the spectrum at the moment where you absolutely have the most chain supported of any RAS provider, but there's nothing, you know, innately like on chain or that's just conduit that's providing a way to thread all of these customers together. So it's a bit of a leading question, but are you kind of looking at these features of first class interop as a stickier feature and thinking about how we might be able to replicate that too within our future roadmap without necessarily building a chain and conduit chain? Maybe we're announcing that right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think chains becoming kind of the new server. We still haven't fully grasped what it means for chain to be the new backend, essentially. In conduit's future, we're going to be running multiple conduit chains. I think that's just a reality. How that ties into interop and this other stuff, ultimately, where we are today is customers need to go 0 to 1 on the chain, and then they need to have the infra to support that. And that is a non-trivial problem. And we are very customer-centric. And ultimately, today, where interop comes up is primarily in bridging assets or making it easier to onboard onto the chain. And there are great solutions out there today. We work with all of them and can't speak highly enough about them in terms of what they're enabling. And I think the natural progression of why do my own chain is I want to do something that is specific to me. And I think by definition, that kind of means there's less interoperable opportunity today. I really think the interop story is maybe a bit overblown. Over time, I could see it becoming bigger. And so that's where I think today we're very focused on getting as many chains as possible. I think the challenge that many of these crypto networks are going to have is the cold start problem. And I think ultimately, if you're solving not the day zero or like not the first year, second year problem, then ultimately no one's really going to want to use your solution. So to even earn the right to get to the point where you can build out some of these solutions in the future, I think you just have to serve where the pain points are today. And so my goal, again, I don't know what the future holds. I think that the best thing that we can do for ourselves is to get as many chains as possible and put ourselves in a position, if it becomes a big customer need, if it's actually going to add value, to be in a position to build those types of solutions.
I think that makes a ton of sense. It's maybe putting the cart before the horse a little bit to solve that first, where the harder problem is actually just acquiring those chains on your platform. And if you could do that, it's much easier, or you're in a much better position trying to figure out ways to connect them if there is demand for that. So it makes a ton of sense. And yeah, guys, I think we've taken up a ton of your time and it's been an awesome, awesome discussion. So maybe just to wrap up, could you just give the audience ways to reach out or any of your contact info?
You can reach out to me on Twitter. And we're also just started a hackathon called Infinite Space Bazaar. Obviously, like if anyone's a developer, we've already got a lot of signups, but looking for as many folks as possible.
You can reach me on Twitter at kandrewhuang, or just go to conduit.xyz and it should be pretty straightforward to get a chain up and running. Love chatting with folks about the intersection of their product requirements and the technical kind of roll-up landscape, and really see it as our and my sweet spot of helping them kind of achieve their goals there. So if you want to chat about it, happy to be a resource.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on, and yeah, we'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys.